Hi everyone, and welcome to Rewatchable number 239. Today we're going to be talking about Angel season 4, episode 4, Slouching Toward Bethlehem, and episode 5, Super Symmetry. My name is Karen, I am a super fan, and I'm joined today by my fellow super fan, Caitlin, and newbies, Ariana and Kristen. Hi everyone.
Hello.
Hello.
As usual, if you would like to get into contact with us, please email us at rewatchable.podcast@gmail.com. Hit us up on Twitter at re_watchable. Find us on this post on hyphable.com or visit us at rewatchablepodcast.tumblr.com. We're going to kick this off with our usual fun facts for the week. Who should I pick on to go first? Caitlin, I feel like you should go first.
All right. My fun fact is that I just watched the first two screeners for Black Lightning, and it was really good. And I was after I finished, I was like, "This was a mistake," because now I'm not going to get anything new till like February.
Oh my gosh, is it that far away?
It premieres like mid-January.
Gosh.
And then I watched the first two.
Nice. I don't really know anything about that, but like obviously it seems like something a little bit different, which is going to be cool. So
yeah, it doesn't feel like any of the other Arrowverse shows for sure. And
that's cool.
I'll do more preview stuff closer to the premiere, but that was the delightful surprise to find those screeners were up. And
yeah,
for those of you who like superhero stuff, definitely check it out.
I love the guy. I love the guy who's playing the lead because I loved Heart of Dixie,
yes!
And he was so great in Heart of Dixie that I'm really looking forward to seeing what he does with Black Lightning. It's gonna be great.
Really great.
Awesome. What about you, Kristen?
My fun fact is that Thanksgiving is this week, which means that Christmas and all things Christmas start on Friday.
That's a Thanksgiving. Thanksgiving is a great holiday. You can have the day after Thanksgiving, okay?
And that's what I said. I said Thanksgiving is Thursday, which means that all things Christmas start on Friday. Why I'm excited is that this week is the kickoff and I can stop hiding my inner Christmas spirit. That's what I'm excited about this week.
Unfortunately, that is completely valid, and I hate it. Gonna break out all my Grinch stuff.
I was gonna say, I'll be down in the basement digging out the Christmas tree Friday at like 12:01 a.m.
And oh, God.
Yeah, it'll be genius.
Whew, send help, everyone.
That's when my Christmas music goes in the playlist, so.
Yes.
Pain. I have a pain in my chest. It hurts. Ariana, what's your fun fact?
I am very busy working 12 and a half hour days.
Well, that's a fun fact. I mean, maybe not fun. That is a long day. My fun fact is that I went to a wine and painting night for the first time in my entire life, and I really loved it. Did a painting of the New York City skyline, so it makes me miss it even more, and the Brooklyn Bridge. And, it's not half bad. And even though Kristen and I went to the same class, our paintings look pretty different. I mean, they're similar, obviously, but, like, there are enough differences that I feel like both are unique in their own way, which was really cool.
Yeah, and we drank wine, and it was really fun, and
yeah,
got to be artists. It was a good time.
Yeah. I am not typically an artistic person, so I felt very awesome doing that. Like I knew what I was doing.
Yeah.
I fooled them all. All right, let's jump into our first Angel episode here. We've got 404 Slouching Toward Bethlehem. In this episode, Cordelia chases back bitches and not acting like herself. She has no memory of who or what she is, and all of her friends are kind of creeping her out because secrets are no fun. I don't know if that was supposed to be just secrets.
Haven't you ever heard that? Secrets are no fun. Secrets hurt someone.
No, but that sounds kind of creepy, actually. It's like that should be in a horror movie.
I've always heard it. Secrets are no fun until you tell everyone.
I was going to say, I've heard secrets are no fun. Secrets are for everyone.
Which this makes, is so strange.
Yeah, but I've heard the phrase just put a little differently, which is kind of interesting.
Oh, okay. Well, hey, I've learned something new today, or three something new since all of you have disagreed. In the end, she decides to go stay with Connor, aka the kid she literally just thought was her own baby, even though he is by far the creepiest liar of them all. Most infuriatingly, all of her idiot friends are still walking on eggshells, so they all let the amnesia girl go stay with the homeless teenager who only weeks ago tried to kill them all, and oh yeah, smirked through his lies for months like an actual serial killer. That is very, 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 very true. But let's kick this off with Cordelia's back. She has no memory. We did learn this at the end of last week's episode, but this is kind of us jumping into this whole new facet of Cordelia. What do you guys think? Ariana, I know you're a big Cordelia fan. You into this plot point, or do you just wish it was over?
I have conflicting feelings. As a whole, I feel like this season has been really good and much improved from the end of last season, but I also don't know if that's just because my expectations are soared now. Like, I really despise Connor, and I really despise Cordelia's new relationship with Connor, which we will discuss later. But like, as a whole, I feel like the gang is much more acting like themselves or acting more in character. And this amnesia plotline, I feel like it could be really fun. I feel like it has the potential to. But she is acting weird. She's acting not quite herself. It's bizarre because she's not acting really, like, you would think that if she had lost all her memory, she would revert back to her most base state. And so I think we've been, like, assuming that her base state is, like, mean cheerleader. But now we know that's not it. If you wipe away all of her memories, she's just like a nice, normal person. So mean cheerleader must have been like a survival tactic she developed to survive high school. And now she's also kind of in survival mode. But it just feels very weird to me that in survival mode, the person she attaches herself to is Connor, because that is the last person I would attach myself to. And I feel like Cordelia is a smart person. And he's by far the creepiest guy. Like, I would rather, I feel like it would make more sense for her to, like, go stay alone in a hotel somewhere than to go with this weird kid.
Sleep in the same bed as this teenager?
Oh, exactly. Oh my gosh. It's so weird. And it just makes me so uncomfortable. But anyway, I liked the way that it ended. But also, mm-hmm. That's also jumping ahead. But I could dig with, like, I could go for having a few more episodes where she has no memory. I would kind of like to see, like, to use the Vampire Diaries, which copied, obviously, everything from Buffy. I kind of like enjoy the storyline where Elena forgets that she's in love with, what's his face? Kristen, help me out. Damon. And then she has to, like, re-fall in love with him. And I kind of like that. I think I would enjoy watching that if Cordelia has to, like, re-fall in love with the pancakes and re-center herself with the group again. And then obviously get her memories back at some point. But I could deal with that as long as Connor goes away. I would be fine with that.
That's fair. And, you know, this kind of all poses the question, because the reason why she goes to Connor is because she says he's the only one that doesn't lie to her. He admits that, you know, he held a knife to her throat and he apologizes for that, which was kind of cool as an isolated moment, and she appreciated his candor in that moment. And the reason why she kind of runs away from the pancakes is because they have lied to her. But what do you guys think? Do you think the team should have lied to her, or do you think they should have been just upfront from the beginning?
Okay, first of all, when he held the knife to her neck, that was so long ago, it's irrelevant now. This was pre him putting Angel in the ocean. This was when he just got there, and then she did her voodoo magic thing that she does. So that knife thing doesn't matter anymore. And, like, what mattered, what he lied about, what nobody said, is, hey, you know, that guy Angel who was really nice to you? I tried to kill him, like, not that long ago, and then I lived in Fred and Gunn's house for a few months. lying to them too. So honestly, I'm not the most honest person here. I'm a big fat liar.
I mean, I don't think he's going to say that though.
Exactly. Cause he's a big fat liar, which is when Cordelia was like, he's the only one who hasn't lied to me. That's when Fred, my girl, who has been on top of it this whole season, should have been like, actually, he's a huge liar and we all hate him.
What about you, Kristen? Do you think that they should have kept the secrets from Cordelia or just told her everything from the beginning?
I mean, okay, she kind of got dropped in their laps. So I can see that your first instinct wouldn't be to be like, hey, we all fight demons. He's kind of half demon. Don't be afraid of him. He's cool. And, you know, everything else is pretty much normal. You know, like, it would be really hard to be like, hi, here's all the scary things that we do. Now we're going to tell you about how we're actually just people and it's fine. Like, I kind of see the instinct to shelter and to, like, protect her a little bit until you have some sort of rapport to then tell her the, like, absolute flat-out truth. Like, I don't think they were trying to lie to her as much as they were trying to ease her into it. And so I kind of see why they did what they did. I'm pretty sure if one of my, you know, good friends was introduced to me as, you know, as like a someone with amnesia, I probably wouldn't tell them all of the scariest things about me first just because it was the truth. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
You wouldn't have any time.
Like you said, right. Kristen, like you didn't have any time to like make a battle plan. Like she just showed up there. And
yeah.
Like, what, you're going to be like, hi, we're all monsters, haha.
Yeah, like, you wouldn't, like, come out with a list of your sins immediately. So, like, I get why their first instinct was to, like, protect her from the truth until they could, you know, get to talk to her about it and, like, really have her listen. So, I get it, but
it's not like she reacted well when she found out, either, so.
Right. I also kind of get that since she has zero memories to go on, she kind of has to go with her gut, and her gut is telling her to trust this strange child who jumped in to protect her and who seems to be telling her the truth. I can understand from Cordelia's point of view why trusting Connor feels right, because compared to the other people who seem to be trying to keep things from her, he immediately tells her something to put her at ease. So I see why she's gravitating toward him, but me, the viewer, is going, run away, run far. What are you doing? Like, stop it. So I see why Cordy's doing it, but it doesn't mean I like it.
I mean, the thing is, she did trust Angel. They almost kissed before she accidentally made him go all bumpy face. So she felt something there. And even later on, she says that she did feel something there, that she knows she can trust him. But I guess, you know, when she's in the state and she has no idea who she is, where she is, why she is in this world, really, she needs to grasp onto something, and that something just needs to be the truth. So I get her natural instinct to be upset that they've lied to her. But at the same time, yeah, I mean, like, you don't start off with, hey, hi, my name's Angel, I'm a vampire, but I'm a good guy. It's a whole thing. You'll figure it out along the way. It's just not a great place to start.
I wouldn't have trusted them the way they would, like, you know, like Angel's awkward wave from the office and like,
okay,
like they kind of looked like,
well, I mean, yeah,
I understand her not trusting them, but I really feel like Connor is by far the creepiest. Like, he lives like in a sewer, and like he has a very creepy smile and touches her inappropriately.
Oh my god,
this is a very okay. This is which episode is it where he's like fondling her breast like in her sleep? It's so weird. I can't, but.
That was really uncomfortable.
I have a question for Kristen, though, because Kristen, now I am convinced that it is actually Cordy because she's acting like Cordy, but didn't you think it was really weird how she just showed up and we didn't, like, we get no explanation for how she got there? And
yeah,
I was like, at first I was like, is this an imposter? Is this some, like,
My first instinct wasn't imposter, but I did kind of I asked Karen, I was like, and she's just back? Like, what happened? Like, why is she just suddenly here? What's going on? Why does she have no memories? Like, what is going on? So, yeah, I was a little surprised that this is how Cordy makes her big return. I think if she had been in any other clothing other than that all-white outfit that she just happened to be wearing when she, like, ascended, I would have been more questioning of it, but since she was in, like, the outfit we last saw her in, I just believed it was her and that somehow this was all weird. But it did feel, like, just odd. Like, how is she just all of a sudden, poof, back and with no memory? Like, it, yeah.
Because she was up there, like, whining, like, Angel, get me out of here. Help me out. Yeah. And obviously, they didn't help get her out, so how was she out?
Who knows? I'm hoping they'll tell us later. Like, things will come to light. But yeah, who knows?
Yeah, so it's a whole situation. Obviously, we'll be talking more about Connor in the next episode as well. Caitlin, I definitely want to get your thoughts and feelings on that. But
I just remembered another really creepy thing he did when he goes and he's like, he says something like, isn't it so fun to kill things? He tells him that. And he's like smiling. He's so weird, you guys.
He has a really creepy smile.
No sane person would go with him.
It's instinct for her, I guess. I don't know. But let's talk about some other people who kind of live in the gray area, which is Lila and Wesley. And they're hooking up again, of course. Ariana's still very much into it, I see.
Yes, I really like it. And I have no idea what everyone else's feelings are because I haven't listened to, like, the last three podcasts. Sorry. But I really like them together. And I don't know what's wrong with me, but I hate Lila. I like her with Wesley, even though he's my fave. So
it's definitely
really interesting sides of each other.
It's definitely interesting, and their relationship is moving in a direction right now that seems legitimate. I mean, we get the thing with the dollar bill and, you know, the whole bet that they made and everything, but their interactions with each other when they can set work aside seem quite genuine, and they really sort of get each other, which, I don't know, is a little concerning, is a little nice at the same time. But she's still manipulating him into...
She manipulates her, too.
Yeah, it's true. It's true. Both of them are still mistrustful of the other. Both of them definitely remember that they're on opposite sides of this thing. So, I don't know. Kristen, what about you? What do you think of their relationship?
I am ready for Wesley to, like, rejoin the clan. I'm ready for him to be a pancake again. I like him. I am really just, I don't know. This thing with him and Lila is just, it's so odd. It's so awkward. Like, they don't care about each other, and they're using each other, and they both know it, which is fine, because at least they both know it, but, like, it just feels so weird, and I don't know. I'm just not a huge fan, and I'm ready for him to, like, really pull one over on her now and, you know, switch his allegiance and come back to the fold, because I'm ready for him to be a part of the group again, and it's really just, it's bugging me.
I would also like him to be a part of the group, but I still don't want the sexcapades with Lila.
Here's a question. Do you want Lila to become a good person?
No.
Maybe not like a pancake, no. But like... No. Go along with Wesley?
She's no, done enough creepy, underhanded things. I just want Lila to kind of pay for her misdeeds. I don't know why. I just don't like her. Like, there's just something about her. I cannot, I can't stand her.
She's not a great person, so that's understandable.
I hate her, and I also think if she was a good person, she would be so boring at being a good person.
Probably.
No, I don't want her to be. I just like that. I think the only thing I like about her is seeing her with Wesley, and I don't even know if I can pinpoint why I like it. I like that she kind of brings out his bad side, that he brings out her good side. I really liked the last episode, or the episode, next episode, which we haven't discussed yet. She's like a little bit jealous.
Yeah.
It's like, this is funny. I like this.
I saw a great description of their dynamic. It was like, and this kind of relates to the next episode, but that Fred is who Wesley wishes he belonged with, and Lila is who he belongs with.
I agree. Mm. I think that's perfect. I have a lot of thoughts on Wesley and Fred, and Ben and Fred, and all three of them.
Good. I definitely want to talk about that, especially Gunn and Fred. But yes, we will get there. Real quick, Caitlin, I'd like to know what you think of just Wesley on his own right now, kind of where he is, you know, his current psyche. How are you feeling about him?
I am intrigued by him because he genuinely seems to be softening some of that hardness that we mm-hmm. saw. Like, he's still not the Wesley from before, obviously.
God, they don't even seem like the same person anymore.
I know. I guess getting your throat slit will really change your perspective.
Yeah.
But getting almost strangled by your best friend while you can't speak.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's amazing what can change your perspective. but he really does seem to be softening a bit. Like, we see him in the next episode go to watch Fred. And in this one, like, he goes to see Angel when he hears that Cordelia is back. Like, and obviously he was the one that found Angel and, like, had spent the whole summer practically looking for him. Mm-hmm. So we're seeing this.
And he had looked for Cordelia too. He had a whole file on her.
So I think we're seeing for Wesley how much he just, as much as he wants to be that rogue demon hunter, like, he really does want to fit into a family.
He's a softie. He's a marshmallow inside.
Mm-hmm. And he wants everyone to think he's not, but we're seeing his exterior is cracking again. And we're seeing some of that mushy marshmallow come out again. Mm-hmm.
He's how I like to make my marshmallows. They're completely burnt on the outside and then nice and gooey on the inside.
Yes.
I just catch mine on fire and then done. Okay, so the last major part of this episode is obviously when Cordy sings and Lorne reads her, and what he sees when he's reading her. Apparently, it's apocalyptic horror, and, you know, Wolfram and Hart want that information, and that was where the whole trick came in, and they kind of sucked it out of his brain, so he doesn't really remember anymore what he saw. He just knows it was really, really bad. So before we kind of get into a couple of fun facts about this part of the story, what the heck do you guys think he saw? Because he wouldn't really talk about it. I mean, we know that it's sort of Revelation style stuff and that it's big and it's bad, but, like, any ideas?
Well, obviously she's going to be tied to the apocalypse, and it's probably part of the reason why she's there. Like, whatever pulled her out of wherever she went, where was she? I just keep calling it, like, the heaven dimension because it's not a
higher plane, I think, yeah.
So whoever pulled her out of there is probably not good, so.
Do you think, you think it's not good that she's back?
Yeah, I think it's not good that she's back because Lauren saw apocalyptic horror when she sang, and Wolfram and Hart are obviously very interested in why she's back, and we don't know why she's back. That's the biggest red herring, I think, that she's there and there's no reason for her to be there.
Yeah, I want to believe that whatever sent her back was from the higher dimension that she was in. So I want to believe that something good sent her back for a reason.
But then, like, Chip would be there. Like,
right.
That she's more useful on Earth.
although it would, you know, if it was like more traumatic for him to return with her than for her to return without her memories and to regain them at some point. Like, I don't know. I have no idea why they sent her back the way they did. But I can't, like, justify why you would see the apocalypse from someone who had risen to a higher plane of existence. Like, it's flooring me, honestly. Like, it just doesn't seem, something's not quite right here. There's something missing. Either she's the possible solution to the apocalypse, and the reason he sees the apocalypse is because, like, she is the one who can stop it. Like, maybe it's a vision or something. I don't know.
Or it's all her fault. Maybe her leaving the higher plane, like, maybe she found a way to escape and it ruined everything.
I mean, that's a possibility at this point. We don't know. So, yeah, I'm torn. I want to believe that somehow Cordy can have a positive influence on the apocalypse, but we'll see how that goes.
Well, fun fact, the song that Cordy sings in this scene, is The Greatest Love of All, is the same song she sang in Buffy season 1 to audition for that talent show, which I did not remember that callback, but that's an excellent callback. And I love that, like, obviously she can't remember who she is, but she still chooses that song. So
yeah, they even make a comment about it, too. They're like, what a weird choice of song.
Yeah.
And she's still equally bad.
Yeah. I love when they sing badly on this show. I don't know why. Like, it gives me such secondhand embarrassment, but at the same time, I'm like, yes.
It's so endearing.
It is really endearing. Caitlin, I wanted you to comment about this whole slouching toward Bethlehem thing, because I don't really know much about this, but it sounds really interesting.
Well, the episode title and the line gets said in mm-hmm. the episode comes from a W.B. Yeats poem called The Second Coming, and I thought it would actually be worth reading the whole poem, because it's not just, it's the last line, but the whole poem sets, like, this real mood that I think actually fits what's kind of being described really well. So if I take a second to read this poem for you.
Oh, please do.
As I was just finishing my poetry lesson as a teacher, so
I'll
take my poetry teacher stance here.
Teach us, Caitlin.
All right. Turning and turning in the widening gyre, the falcon cannot hear the falconer. Things fall apart, the center cannot hold. Mere anarchy is loosed upon the world, the blood-dimmed tide is loosed, and everywhere the ceremony of innocence is drowned. The best lack all conviction, while the worst are full of passionate intensity. Surely some revelation is at hand. Surely the second coming is at hand. The second coming. Hardly are those words out when a vast image of Spiritus Mundi troubles my sight. A waste of desert sand, a shape with lion body and the head of a man, a gaze blank and pitiless as the sun, is moving its slow thighs while all about it wind shadows of the indignant desert birds. The darkness drops again, but now I know that 20 centuries of stony sleep were vexed to nightmare by a rocking cradle. And what rough beast, its hour come round at last, slouches towards Bethlehem to be born.
Whew. So that really does set up an atmosphere, doesn't it?
The poem was written in 1919 in the aftermath of World War I, which was, you know, at that time the worst horrors ever seen mm-hmm. in the world. So this poem is really describing the second coming, but instead of it being like the Christian second coming with salvation in Jesus, it's like it's gonna get even worse, basically. It's the second coming is far worse than what is
already here. Prophetic too, because then World War II happened.
Right. Mm-hmm.
So when it says, and what rough beast, its hour come round at last, slouches toward Bethlehem to be born, you know.
Oh my gosh.
It's kind
knowing
of like
something about Charisma Carpenter's real life throws a wrench into things. I'm not going to say anything, but reading that line, that's interesting.
And that obviously sounds very apocalyptic, so the fact that this episode was titled that, that Lauren said that line specifically, you're right, it really does set up this tone, this atmosphere of what's going to be coming next. And, you know, Lauren is a pretty lighthearted guy, and he's read a lot of people, and he's usually pretty upfront about what he sees. Sometimes he can't share it all, but he's just like, you know, dude, like, you're going to have to go through a lot of stuff to get to where you want to be, but you can do it. And, you know, he's a fairly positive person, but he was terrified of what he saw in Cordelia's future.
I mean, he fled. He didn't run. He fled.
He did, yeah. I love how upfront about it that he's like, I mean, I won't necessarily call him a coward, but like, I think he thinks he's a coward. And he's very honest about it. He is a realist, yeah. All right, let's jump into our favorite scenes now. Caitlin, why don't you go ahead?
Mine was when Cordelia was going through all her things, and there were kind of some throwbacks to old things, like that haircut that was really awful. She was like, yikes. But I think my favorite thing was when she was looking through the yearbook, and it was like, sorry, like, wasn't crazy when Homeroom burned down, and what about that big snake, and thanks for the fired arrows. And I'm like, So now I'm imagining people, like, after they've killed the mayor, like, signing each other yearbooks because they wouldn't have known about the snake, obviously. So I just have this hilarious image of people, like, the destroyed high school in the background, like, signing each other's yearbooks. And I just found that hilarious.
It's still smoking. There's, like, dirt smudged on her face. Oh, yeah, totally signed your yearbook.
And, like, the rotting carcass of the snake, and they're like, yeah, have a great summer.
they're like sitting on the curb signing each other's yearbooks. Yeah. Like, yeah. Oh gosh.
Ariana, your favorite scene is slightly more uplifting than that image.
My favorite scene is when Angel is talking to Corley, like when she picks up the shoes and he's like, yeah, you wore those the night we went to the ballet, because like the look on his face remembering the ballet. That is my favorite episode too, or memory also of Angel, and it is my go-to episode for when I'm feeling sad. I'm like, oh, I feel sad right now about like life, I'm gonna watch the ballet episode of Angel, and it always makes me happy. And also when Cordelia is looking at the photo of her and Angel holding baby Connor. The good times, guys. There will never be anything more perfect than Angel and Cordelia feeding a baby on their bed and talking about their boat and ski resort that they're going to buy. So I miss those times.
Mm-hmm. Who knows?
We can shrink baby, like Connor, back into a baby.
That would be terrifying. Can you imagine his little creepy smile?
Oh, God. This is not the Connor I was asking for.
Well, it's the Connor you got. All right, Kristen, what about your favorite scene?
Okay, right after Cordy sees Angel's, what did you call it? Wrinkle face?
His Mr. Bumpy face,
which I love. After she saw his face and goes running from the room and then runs into Lorne, who then scares the crap out of her and she just starts slapping him. I about died. Like, she's just like, it's like two-handed, just slaps, like, ah! As she's like screaming at him to get off her.
And I love that he's screaming too, because he's just as terrified.
Yeah, like, it was just a great, really lovely little moment. And it doesn't really mean anything, but I really, really loved it. And I just laughed really hard. So that's my favorite.
My favorite scene was so stupid, but God, I loved it so much. It's when Angel gathers all his little jars of blood in his arm and like tiptoes out of the room into his office. And she's like looking around, and she goes and walks somewhere else, and you just see him like flash in front of the camera because he's still running around holding all those jars of blood. Oh my God.
Yes.
It was, and I so feel like you funny.
Blink, and like if you blink, you'll miss it. Like, oh, he's yeah. Just out of the corner.
It's like a kid who got caught with the cookie.
Yeah. Only it's blood. And he probably should be hiding it because, you know, she would have questions. All right, Caitlin, what's your favorite line?
Mine was right after Cordelia runs away and Angel goes, "How could you let her wander off alone?" And Fred goes, "The words grown woman come to mind." And the gal does have a history of whooping ass. I mean, you saw the hurting she put on those Wolfram and Hart dudes. And could she really turn me into a rat? And then Fred's face, she's just so exasperating. I just love that. Just cracked me up.
What about you, Ariana?
Mine is also a gun line, basically. But it's when Cordelia insists that they're all Russian spies. And Gun goes, "So I look Russian to you?" And she goes, "Black Russian." And Angel goes, "A drink."
That was pretty good.
Like, so patiently as well. Yeah. Like, I know you have amnesia, but that's a drink.
What about you, Kristen?
Mine is after Cordy takes off with Connor and they don't really know where she is. And Angel says, "We're going to have to widen the search. All hospitals, police stations. She couldn't have just disappeared." And then there's a beat. And he goes, "Okay, once."
As soon as he said that, I was like, "Really, man?"
Beautiful.
My favorite line was from Gunn, and it goes, Cordelia says the vampire with a soul and his wacky gang of sidekicks, and Gunn just goes, "Not a sidekick." You're right, Gunn. You are not a sidekick. You're the hero of your own story.
And then he, like, insists.
We'll get to in the next episode.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, boy. Let's jump into that, because I actually have a lot of thoughts about that particular scene, which I'm sure you guys do as well. So we've got Angel 405, Super Symmetry. In this episode, Fred presents her first physics paper, and after almost getting sucked into another dimension, finds out that her professor sent her to Pylea in the first place because, of course, misogyny. In the end, she sets out for revenge, but Gunn takes the burden upon himself by killing the professor, both stealing Fred's agency and saving her soul in the process. How do we feel about that? Meanwhile, Connor finally fulfills his Oedipus complex. Sorry. By making out with Mom just in time for Cordelia Chase to realize that she's the baddest bitch in town and has no need to kiss teenagers when hot vampires are swooning for her at a hotel. Oh, man. Yeah. Yeah, you've hit that nail on the head, Ariana. That's for sure. Okay, so let's talk about Fred first. Fred's super excited because, guys, she got printed into a magazine, a paper, and we didn't know she was working on any physics stuff, although they kind of saved that by Gunn saying, you know, she didn't want anybody to know about it. But, you know, he's trying to be real supportive. He doesn't necessarily understand any of the words that are coming out of her mouth, but he's as excited for her as she is about, you know, kind of returning back to this life. So, yeah.
She's so excited, and he's so excited. She's excited. Oh,
yeah. I just love that. And then they're excited together, and then they take care of that excitement. It was really cool, though. I mean, again, like, I really like these guys together, and I think they've done a really good job so far of making their relationship interesting without having to cause, like, so many problems with, like, okay, are they going to break up this week? And a lot of their issues are kind of, like, outside factors. But then they talk about it and they make it better. And it'll be interesting if that holds true going forward, considering what happens. But, yeah. What about you, Caitlin? Do you like Fred and Gunn together?
I adore them together. I think they're wonderful, and I think it's so cute how excited Gunn gets. Though I didn't read everything as entirely excited the whole time. I did think that he was at points starting to worry that she might decide to leave the life of killing demons to go back to academia for a little bit. And he was getting a little nervous about that. But I loved how he was trying so hard.
He was trying. And, you know, I think a lot of that just stems from jealousy. You know, when she obviously loves him and pays very close attention to him. And they go out and they hunt demons together. And it's something they can do together. Physics, they can't really do together. Unfortunately, that is not really Gunn's jam. So I think there was some jealousy there. But I think, you know, I think he would have come around.
I don't really want to call it jealousy so much as I feel like it's an insecurity. Like that. Because I guess maybe he did feel jealous of, like, the professor. But I don't feel like it came from a place of malice. Like, I don't feel like it came from, oh, I don't want my girlfriend to be better than me. I feel like it was much more like, I hope I'm good enough for my girlfriend.
Yeah. No, I would definitely agree with that. And you know who else is excited that Fred got published? Wesley. So he leaves Lila to go to Fred's play. And this is after Lila brings him a genuine gift and took the afternoon off to be with him. So, I mean, that's kind of a huge thing on her end because she's all about work and everything. And she did this for him because she felt bad about everything that happened and the trick that she played on him. And he was like, yeah, really appreciate that, but I got to go. And he went to just go see Fred. You know, he sat in the back. He didn't really interact with anyone else. And that kind of shows you, I think at least, where Lila stands in relation to his feelings for the women in his life.
Yeah, I mean, it kind of sucks for Lila. I really hate this bitch, but it sucks that I do feel like Wesley at this moment in time is for her, her realest connection. Like, he's probably the most important person in her life, which sucks a lot for her. He's probably the person she cares about most. But in terms of Wesley, like, he's had real friendships and real relationships with people that he actually loves. And I don't think Lila loves anyone. Like, even though he's fighting with these people, he still loves them.
Yeah.
And he still cares about Fred.
Yeah, like, I mean, I think he cares about all of them. Just because right now they can't seem to get on the same page doesn't mean that they don't ultimately all care about the other. Like, after everything Wes went through that summer to kind of, you know, to find Angel, and he tried to find Cordy and, like, all of that, like, you can tell that he still has genuine affection for all of these people. And, you know, he did some things and they, you know, made some assumptions and there's mistakes made, but, like, they both sides still care.
Also, on, like, a creepier level, that makes me more uncomfortable, I feel like he really idolizes Fred and kind of sees her as, like, this perfect, unattainable girl that he doesn't quite deserve, but she's, like, this pretty princess who is all magic and unicorns.
Yeah.
He's going to sit in the back and admire her from afar.
Honestly, I feel the same way. I think that he puts her up on a pedestal. Not that she doesn't necessarily deserve that, because, like, we've seen Fred for quite a while now. She is, you know, a brilliant person. Yeah, she is an awesome character. But I think he does idolize her in a way that makes me worry a little bit. And you also put a note in here, like, Wes and Fred are maybe not the healthiest couple together, or even the most compatible. And I think, you know, we see Gunn and Fred all the time, and they really click in a way that seems so easy. Not that they don't have their bumps in the road, but it's very easy for them to kind of get on the same page. And I think especially this current Wes, who I don't know that I would want him to be anywhere near Fred. Maybe Fred would make him better, but...
I think they make each other worse, and we can discuss that later. They make each other much worse.
So, Caitlin, you know, you love Gunn and Fred. What do you think about Wes and Fred and their potential?
I think Wes is in love with the idea of Fred and not Fred herself. I think, and like I said earlier, I think he feels like he should be with someone like Fred, like his intellectual equal, but there's a lot of darkness in him that probably stems out of his background of a lot of abuse and everything. I think he is more compatible with Lila, who is very intelligent, but she's a lot sneakier, and Fred is a lot more, I don't even want to say innocent, especially after this episode, but, you know, she's basically the polar opposite of Lila. So, I don't know. I think Fred is an idea that he loves. I don't know that he really loves her as a person, though.
Yeah. Like, I feel like they keep pushing that, like, Fred, like, in this episode, at least, they tried to make it seem like, oh, Fred and Wes are so compatible because they're both the brainy ones. But I don't think that just being at the same, like, intellectual level in terms of, like, being brainy, I don't think that that means that you're necessarily compatible emotionally. And I don't think that they are. And I think they bring out bad stuff in each other.
Yeah, I was going to kind of say something similar, because I think, as sad as it makes me to say this, I think Wesley can be his truest self when he's with Lila. I think Fred would be disappointed in some of the things that Wesley has had to do. I mean, despite what she goes through in this episode, she pretty, I mean, that's a very big deal for her, but she pretty much is quite the positive person, and obviously she was very triggered here, but Wesley can be quite awful, and that doesn't mean evil, but he's done some awful things, and I don't know, I think he would have to hide a lot of his inherent nature if he were with Fred, and I think that would end up causing problems.
See, okay, I kind of think, I love Fred and Gunn together, but I kind of think that Wes and Fred are in very different places in their lives. I think if Wes from that we met in Buffy would have met Fred, like student Fred before she ended up in Pylea,
aww,
I think they would have been, I think they could have worked. They would have grown together, they would have learned together, and I think it would have been a very different relationship. Just as if the events of this episode had gone differently and Fred had been solely responsible for ending her professor's life and having to go through that darkness and figure out what that means for her, I think she and her having to deal with darknesses inside of her that I think exist. We haven't seen a lot of them, but like, I don't think she's this perfect happy-go-lucky girl that we know. Like, I think there is the need for vengeance inside her. There is that, we saw it in this episode, that I think there is potential for them if down the road that it could work. I don't, I'm not necessarily saying that they'll ever match up, but I think like they do have personalities that could work, but they keep meeting at the wrong time. Like they just are never going to click.
I totally agree with you, Kristen. I think that she definitely has a darkness in her. I also think that Gunn has a darkness. They all do. They all have some kind of darkness. But I think that what makes Fred and Gunn work is I've definitely seen it with Gunn. And I guess in this episode, we finally saw it with Fred. I feel like she balances him in a way where his darkness isn't like consuming him, where she does bring out his light. And I feel like that he kind of encourages her to not go into her dark side. Like we saw that a lot in this episode when she's like freaking out about Pylea and he's able to calm her down.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas I feel like Fred and Wes in this episode, we saw on the other hand, or really feeding into each other's darkness and like letting themselves go into that.
Yeah, I like that, Kristen. I like the idea that, you know, they keep meeting at the wrong times, basically, because, you know, that, like we were saying before, the Wesley we saw back in Buffy is basically a completely different character, a completely different person from this one. I mean, there are traits that have kind of carried over in a lot of ways, but Wesley has changed so much. And I think that despite their compatibility, you know, intellectually and all of that, they've both had experiences that have shaped them as people. And right now, like you were just saying, Ariana, that's kind of dangerous. They feed into each other's darkness, and neither one of them needs to be much darker right now. But speaking of Fred, who she even says in this episode something about, you know, they think she's all rainbows and unicorns and all of this, but she almost gets sucked back into that portal, and everything about going into Pylea comes rushing back to her. She really does have PTSD, having lived in this hell dimension for 5 years. And I can't imagine what she's going through. And I think the callback to her writing on the walls was, like, really good, because it reminds you of the mental state she was in right after she got back. And it shows you that she's kind of reverted back to that momentarily, because it's like a coping mechanism.
It also reminds you, like, just how far she's come from that, the girl who was, like, moony-eyed over Angel and was mm-hmm. writing on the walls in her apartment. And, like, you know, you remember
tables.
Yeah, like, you remember that girl, and then you look at Fred now, who is running off with gun to take down demons and, like, doesn't think twice about it. Like,
she's, like, running Angel investigations, basically.
Yeah. Yeah, like, she's come a long way. So to see her reverting back, like, in that moment because of this PTSD, like, it breaks your heart. Like, it just, you've got this. Like, come on, girl. Like, you can do it.
Yeah.
It was also a great reminder, like, it made her trigger of revenge feel so much more not out of character, because mm-hmm. it was such a dark turn. But it reminds you how awful Pylea was for her.
Right. Exactly.
So I would say we saw, even in, like, the season premiere, we saw some hints of her darkness, when she tased Connor.
Mm-hmm. Like, right.
The top with the taser once they found out what he did to Angel.
I mean, was she over the top, though?
I mean, he was...
I feel like she could have gone a little further.
But in terms of, like, incapacitating him, she did more than she needed to.
Yeah, maybe. No. Okay, I want to take a brief respite from all the darkness that is currently Fred and just read out this side note. We find out that Angel has fans on the internet. So cute. And I love the little, like, fourth wall breaking kind of thing going on here. It just, I don't know, it felt like a nice little shout out to fans and stuff.
Yeah, it was cute.
He's so delighted.
See, and then I was like, there must be, like, discussions about Buffy and stuff online, too, if they talk about Angel.
Yeah. Definitely. Definitely. I wonder if those, like, boards, those forums, like, fight each other. Or, like, if they're
shipping them.
That's exactly what I was going to say. That's exactly what I was going to say. No, she belongs with Spike. She doesn't belong with Spike. She belongs with Angel. It's little sub-forums. Spike fans only.
Oh boy.
Talk about this, Buffy. Okay, back to Fred really quick. So Fred finds out that her old professor sent not only her, but other girls to hell dimensions because he didn't want them to outshine him. Which I just, oh my god, like, overreact much? Holy crap. So, obviously, Fred wants revenge, not only for herself, but for the other people, the other women that he sent away. And Angel tried to talk her out of it, and she plays it real cool, and she's like, you know what, you guys are right. I'm not gonna, you know, kill him anymore. I'm gonna go take a nap. And instead, she goes over to Wesley, who teaches her, we assume off camera, how to open a portal and suck the professor into it, so that he kind of feels what she felt through all those years. And I don't know, And I guess, yeah, we can just throw in, you know, Gunn shows up to stop Fred. But when it comes down to it, like when she decides this is definitely something she wants to do, he breaks the professor's neck and throws him in the wormhole and then lies to Angel about it. And I feel like there's so much to talk about here.
Yes. Can we break this up into two different incidents? Because I do feel like I need to talk about Wes's reaction and Gunn's reaction to Fred.
Okay.
Which, I don't know. I definitely feel strongly about Wesley. Gunn, I feel more complicated. But what bothers me about Wesley's reaction isn't necessarily that he helps her open the portal, because that was a choice she made, and people have the right to make their own choices, good or bad. I don't know if I probably would not have helped her do that, but okay. Wes can also make a choice. He made the choice to help her. Okay, but if you are going to do that, if you're going to help somebody murder someone, then you need to be there to pick up the pieces afterwards. Like, he just dropped her off and was like, all right, have a good
time. She didn't want him there, though.
Okay, but he needed to stay. Because this is going to, obviously, he should know killing someone is very traumatizing, and he should have been there. Like, you can't just leave somebody there to do it. Also, what if she changed her mind? What if she decided halfway through, she was like, actually, he's closed this portal. This was a terrible idea. I don't want to be a murderer.
And you know what? I just want to give a shout out to the sick burn she made when she was like, Gunn would never let me do this. It's part of the reason why I love him. And I was like, damn. So yeah, the Wesley thing is unfortunate, but like you said, people are allowed to make their own decisions, and he's in that dark place right now, so I'm really not surprised that he helped her. And I think, I don't know, do you think he had ulterior motives there?
Oh,
was
definitely.
He trying to be like the guy who was like, look, I helped you do what you wanted to do, now be with me?
Yeah, like, well, I don't know if he was like, be with me, but I definitely feel like, at least subconsciously, it was like, well, Gunn won't help you do this, so I will.
He even brings it up in the car. He's like, shouldn't Gunn be here or something?
Oh, yeah. My gosh, Wesley. I want to bring his stuff.
Well, I also sort of think that maybe, I don't think he's actively choosing this, but I think maybe somewhere in his head, he's thinking, if she kills this guy, she's going to need me, not Gunn. Like, she's going to come to me because I know what it's like and I've got the darkness in me. And she'll come back to me because I'm the one who helped her do it. Like, I'm wondering if that's not lingering in his head. Like, if I let her go and do this on her own, she'll come back to me looking for help again to help, to deal with this and to get past it and all that. So,
like, it'll be our secret.
Yeah, like, I don't think he chose that. Like, I want Fred to need me. But, like, I think in his head, it's all a part of it. Like, I'm going to help Fred. Of course I'm going to help Fred. This is what she wants. I'm going to help, you know. Like, I think somewhere in his head, it's just like, but she'll need me again. And this is how I can make that happen. Poor Wes is in such a weird place. Like, he just needs to know. Breaks my heart.
Yeah. But Gunn, guys, Gunn. I think it was so huge that he decided to kill the professor in the way that he did, because okay, this is how I view it. And I think some people are definitely gonna disagree with me, which is fine. I'm not saying that like this is the best scenario, but in my mind, yes, Gunn took that choice away from Fred, but I kind of don't mind, to be honest, because he was trying to protect her, because when you kill someone, I mean, they say this not only in the show, but everywhere. When you kill someone, it changes you, and that will haunt you forever. He wanted to save her from that, and I think he still gave her what she wanted, which was the professor dead, although she did want a little bit more suffering. But at the same time, he also kind of saved that guy's life in a weird way, because he killed him and then threw him in the hell dimension. He didn't just throw him in the hell dimension, which meant that he wouldn't be suffering, but he still paid for his crimes. Not saying that it was right, but I think in Gunn's mind, this was like the only way it was really going to work out.
But if he says that he's going to lose Fred by her doing that, isn't Fred going to lose him because he took that on himself? Like, whatever was going to happen to her is now going to affect him.
I mean, I think their relationship is over now. It's done. I don't think that they can come back from this now. But I definitely agree with you, Karen. Like, I can understand why it would bother her. I can understand. He did take away a choice from her, which bothers me on, like, a grown woman level. But as he did it out of love, I don't think that it absolves her of this. The death is still on her hands. He would never have done this if it wasn't for her. But at least now, like, it's not on her alone. Like, they did it together. And so they have to bear this guilt together for the rest of their lives.
And you think that will divide them, not unite them?
Oh, no, I definitely think it'll divide them because Gunn didn't want to kill that guy.
I think it's the opposite. Where it's gonna take some time for them to get past it. I think if Gunn would have allowed this guy to be cast into the Hell Dimension and Fred would be the only one who has all of the guilt of that on her conscience, it would have eaten away at her and she never would have been able to be with Gunn again because she wouldn't have been able to deal with it.
But no, I think that
Gunn having taken part in it means that it's not all on her and he will take a bit of that burden from her. And it will allow them to move past it. Like, it's their burden to bear now. It's not her burden to bear. And so because it's on both of them, I think they have a chance at getting past it.
I think that was his goal. Like, I think he wanted to show, like, now this is our burden. But honestly, I don't think that in her rational mind, she would want him dead either. So now I feel like she's going to have an extra burden of not just that I killed this guy, I made Gunn kill this guy, and now Gunn has to live with this again. So I feel like it's just adding more guilt on top of it.
And go back to Go back to what she said in the car to Wesley. I don't think Gunn has it in him, and that's what I love about him.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
And then she drove him to that. He did it because he loves her so much.
Here's a question for you, Caitlin, and you, Ariana, because you were saying, like, if Gunn didn't want Fred to do this because he would lose Fred, then who's to say, like, Fred's not going to lose Gunn? Do you think Gunn believes that he is stronger than her, that he is able to take this on? Maybe he's in a darker place than she is and therefore knows that he can handle what he's done and doesn't believe that she's able to?
I mean, I just assumed that Gunn has killed people before, at least in self-defense. I had that assumption. Maybe just because I've seen him kill so many vampires, but I just
I'm gonna say I don't know that he has. Like, we've only seen him, as far as I can remember, killing demons.
But I think I kind of thought the same thing Ariana did, that him being responsible for the death of a thing is not, like, it doesn't seem as big. For some reason, I just feel like Gunn either knows, maybe it's because his sister was a vampire and he killed her, right? Yeah?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Like, maybe it's something having to do with that, in that, like, he didn't kill his sister. His sister was a vampire, but he also knows what it's like to lose someone like that and almost at his hand. So for me, like, him dealing with death, I feel like he's already dealt with the guilt of having killed before, whether or not it was like a human being or something. Like, I feel like he's struggled with that monster already. So here it might not have the effect that it would if Fred were the one to solely take this guy's life.
But you know what? I think everybody, you know, particularly in the show, particularly Gunn, keeps forgetting Fred's been in Pylea. She's done some pretty awful things to survive. And we don't know the extent of what she's done, but she's referenced on more than one occasion the hell that that hell dimension was. So the fact that she wouldn't be able to handle this, you know, I think it would bother both of them. And I think it will bother both of them. But the idea that Fred isn't strong enough to take that on, that that's what Gunn believes, kind of bothers me a little bit.
I don't know if it's a strength thing as much it is as it is like an innocence thing. Like, we know Fred's not as innocent as she appears to be, but it sort of feels to me more like this would weigh on you, and I don't like, and it would probably change your personality, and it would change things about you that I love.
Yeah, I don't know if she, because I know she does seem innocent, but like we talk all the time, she isn't innocent, but there is an inherent goodness to her that the rest of them don't quite have. That, I mean, I think they'd all like to keep that in her as long as possible.
Yeah, that's definitely fair. Oh, well, I'm definitely interested to hear what listeners have to say about this as well, because I think that either way, this is a turning point. It's kind of a big deal. Neither one of these shows depict killing a human being very often, and when they do, it's kind of a big deal. So if you guys have any other comments for us, let us know what you're thinking. Meanwhile,
it's interesting too, because that last episode of Buffy had Buffy giving a big speech about how once you jump into the supernatural, you know, you, or once it, with its humans, you let the police deal with it. And that sort of seemed like the direction Angel was going by trying to confront the professor. And so it's just another instance where the shows are kind of taking slightly different approaches to the same topic, I guess.
But I still think that, like, Angels as a show, their approach is not like, they made the right choice, good job for them for snapping his neck. Like,
oh, I agree. I just think it's interesting that you, we have these parallels between, it was both the O5s and the seasons.
I definitely love the subtle parallels like that, that they, that have been happening for actually quite a while now. It's cool when they're thematically similar.
And they're both about
Go ahead.
I was going to say they're both about vengeance, because 705 was the Anya episode. So and this is about Fred's vengeance. So both of those episodes were about vengeance and the fallout of vengeance.
Maybe she should have summoned a vengeance demon.
Oh, boy.
Now that would have been interesting.
Oh, boy.
Yeah. Okay, let's talk about Connor now, because, oh, I just get, like, chills down my spine in not the good way.
It's the most disgusting thing I've ever seen in my life.
So, first of all, Connor sneaks into the hotel to get Cordelia's stuff. And Angel is trying to play it cool. He's trying to be like, okay, yeah, you know, whatever she needs. Like, here are her slippers. Obviously, he knows her very well. Oh. Which is really cute. But, like, Connor, it feels like it's like he's trying to do this for Cordelia, but he's really doing it for himself. Because, as you noted here, Ariana, that, like, he purposely doesn't bring a picture of Angel. Like, he pretends to care about her, but he's being very selfish about it. And he'll care about her to the extent that it still benefits him and it still means that she'll stay with him. And their whole, like, relationship right now is so strange. Like, and I love Cordy, but, like, why is she sleeping in the same bed as him?
Because Joss Whedon hates her.
Yeah.
That's why. That's the real answer. I don't know. This is, it's so bizarre, and it's really uncomfortable to watch, because he's exhibiting like very like stereotypical abusive boyfriend behavior, where like you're trying to isolate the girlfriend to keep her away from her other friends, making it seem like you're the only one who can provide and protect for her. And like getting very angry, like at the end, he gets so angry when she's like, "Hey, I'm going to go see Angel." And I don't know if it was, maybe it wasn't written to come off that way, but the actor is really scary and pretty terrifying. So yeah, it's just really creepy.
Read him less as abusive and more as childish or childlike. He has never had the opportunity to grow and develop emotionally, so a lot of his reactions feel like a petulant child, which sort of makes the dynamic creepier, because Cordelia, mm-hmm. even without her memories, is a grown-ass woman, and he is emotionally a child, mm-hmm. and that makes that dynamic gross in a completely different way than the Oedipus complex thing.
And she's not necessarily aware of the entire story of, like, what Connor's been through, but she knows that Connor is Angel's son, and she knows that she was holding that child in her arms with Angel, wondering if she was his mother. And she's really a maternal person in a lot of ways. And I'm just, I don't know, to be honest, to kind of step outside of this for a minute, I think that this was just like really poor writing and really kind of disgusting on the side of the writers. And I don't know, maybe Whedon was involved with this. I honestly don't really know. But it just, like, it felt unnecessary. It felt gross. And I don't know why they needed to go down this road to cause tension, because there was already tension with the fact that she trusted him over Angel.
I think you're 100% right, Karen. This is terrible writing. And when the season's over, we can discuss the terrible writing and why it happened. But, like, I think the only thing that makes sense is what you said, is that she's a very maternal person. Maybe in her very deep subconscious, she remembers holding this baby and being so close to this baby and feeling the need to protect it, that maybe now she feels like a baby's so safe. You feel safe with a baby. So
also did that, like, thing where, like, she went into his mind when he got back, like, yeah. Maybe there's that subconscious connection between them that she doesn't know what it is, but it's there.
She slept in the same bed with him when he was a baby, so
so it's clearly the same.
As far as, like,
also very close to her breast when he was a baby as well. So.
Oh God.
God. As far as, like, why this happened, clearly the writers, like, were trying to find a way to get Cordy back to the hotel, and this is a really lazy way to get her there. And, like, I don't like it either. It's terrible. It's terrible writing. But, like,
yeah,
they used this as a way to get her out of there and back to the hotel. Like, she needed to reject the hotel and run from them. And then needed a reason to go back. I think that's why this is happening. Like, obviously, I haven't seen it the rest of the season, so I don't know. But, like, I feel like that's why this has gone on. And I just, ugh, it's so weird.
I would like to pitch an alternative storyline for season 4. That instead of running to Connor, she would have run to Wesley. And, like, they would have hung out for a while in the loft. And then she would decide, you know what, I really should go back to Angel. And you should think about coming back to sometime.
See, that would have been so perfect.
Mm-hmm. But no, they want to do this whole father-son fight over the same girl thing.
Yeah, that just...
One of them is the stepmother.
But anyway, it does bring Cordelia back to the hotel. And Angel and her start talking, and she asks if they were ever in love. And it cuts to black. So should we wait until this isn't your favorite scene?
No, it's my favorite line.
It is your favorite line. Yeah. Okay. Should we just discuss it then?
I mean, we can discuss it now. I don't have anything to say.
You gasped.
I gasped and I was like, oh baby.
This does not surprise me at all. But Kristen, I'm curious what your reaction to it was.
I mean, it's a big question. it's a big question for her to ask. Clearly, it leads me to believe that something is lingering. Like, something's coming back to her, because you don't come up with that. She doesn't have any pictures of Angel. She hasn't seen them because Connor left them out. And she's been talking to Connor and has been seeing everything through Connor's eyes. Like, it makes me wonder if she's not, maybe not remembering things, but, like, she's got lingering, like, emotions regarding these people. Like, something is sticking with her about Angel. Like, as she's returning to the hotel, like, she clearly has an agenda. She has a reason to go back, and it's that something is lingering in her that has something to do with Angel. And so I'm really hoping that this conversation will lead to things that may help her remember who she is.
One can only hope.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's a very mean place to cut to black, though, isn't it?
Yeah. Like, it's come not on. Nice. It's not nice.
We did.
Yeah, we're done.
I think what I love about this, though, is that it makes me excited to be able to forget about the end of last season, because I really loved season 3 until Cordelia dyed her hair blonde. Then it got really bad. So I didn't like their forced love at the end, but I liked their pre-opera awkward love, and I like that this question brings up the awkward love again.
Yeah. Well, we'll just have to wait and see. All right, let's jump into our favorite scenes now. Caitlin, why don't you kick us off?
Mine is a random one, but it was when Gunn and Angel confront that kid at the comic book store that he worked at, because Gunn is whipping out, like, comic book references, and then Angel's, like, sitting there reading comic books, and then the kid's like, "You're Angel, right? Like, can I be your intern?" Like, the whole thing is hilarious and delightful, and there was nothing I did not enjoy about that scene.
Oh my gosh, it would be so great if they had an intern. They should get one.
Gosh.
Not him, he was annoying, the comic book guy, but, like, yeah. A nice fun intern. Nice age-appropriate love interest for Connor.
We want a love interest for Connor.
And then it's also funny because...
Oh, one that isn't Cordelia.
It's also funny because we're always like, read the comics.
Yeah. Yes. All right, Ariana, what was your favorite scene?
My favorite scene was when Gunn snaps the neck of that guy, because holy smokes, I was not expecting that. But their relationship was so lovely in this episode. Like, I love that for the first time. They're always so cutesy, but I love that in this episode for the first time we got to see them be kind of sexy. Mm-hmm. And we got to see, I feel like, the full extent of their relationship and how deep it is. And with that snap neck, I was just like, well, it's over now. It's done. I don't see how they come back from this. So I really feel like it's the beginning of the end, which kind of sucks, but it'll hopefully be an interesting downward spiral.
Interesting downward spiral. Those are words to worry about.
Yeah.
Kristen, what was your favorite scene?
My favorite scene is probably my favorite scene because it's also my favorite line, so we'll get there. But okay. Angel fighting, like, the demon guy that the creepy professor dude, like, summoned from wherever. And
the
just,
one with,
like,
the 9 lives?
Yeah, like, the fact that the thing wouldn't die was just brilliant. So we'll get to the real reason why it's my favorite scene.
Okay. Mine's really easy. Mine's just Cordelia shutting down Connor, being like, I don't know who I am, so, like, I don't think I should be kissing you, and also I'm gonna go back to Angel now. And that was just really great.
That everything's right in the world.
Yeah. It was like, thank you. Okay, favorite lines, Caitlin.
Mine comes out of my favorite scene when Angel discovers there are forums and chat rooms back. And he says, they talk about me in the chatty rooms?
It's like, oh, he's so awkward.
He's such a dork. I love him. He was really, like, great in this episode. Like, just, yeah. Like, really great one-liners and dorkiness. Yeah. And it was delightful. Mm-hmm.
And Ariana, we know your favorite line, but would you like to read it for us again?
Were we in love? Better not chicken out.
Ooh. Well, we're just talking about him being honest.
Better be.
So we'll see how he interprets that, I guess. Kristen, your favorite line was great.
My favorite line is from Angel in my favorite scene, and he says, come on, I'm holding your head. It's just brilliant.
That was pretty funny. You're so mad, too.
It was great. It was just great.
Yeah. Mine comes from Fred when she is just not taking shit from anyone anymore. And she just goes, you know what they say about payback? Well, I'm the bitch. And I was like, yeah! I mean, in that moment, I was like, also, but please don't kill him. But yes, that was such a good line.
Yeah, it's a very good line.
Cool. Well, once again, guys, thank you for listening. If you would like to get into contact with us, please email us at rewatchable.podcast@gmail.com. Hit us up on Twitter at re_watchable. Find us on this post on hyperbole.com or visit rewatchablepodcast.tumblr.com. And as usual, we love iTunes reviews. And if you rate us 5 stars, then I will ... What am I going to do, guys? I'm nothing without my cues.
open a portal and send them to a hell dimension.
Oh, that's a terrible incentive.
I know. I'm just kidding. She won't.
Open a portal and send you to a
kitten dimension. There
you go. Oh, a kitten dimension. That sounds.
That sounds amazing.
Unless you have allergies like me, then it'd be.
Oh, damn! That's true. That's true.
Spike would be rich.
You would be rich. Yeah, or maybe just a dimension of your choice. Maybe you're allergic to both cats and dogs, which is, I'm so sorry if that's your life, but it happens. It happens. All right, let's read some listener feedback. I suppose I'll take this first one. This one is from Megan B. at Motley. Motley underscore 91, who says, do a Boy Meets World rewatch. Man, it's been a long time. every once in a while, we're still getting suggestions for rewatchable, but you know what, guys? It's not that far away anymore.
It's not.
Like, we're getting close. We're going to be ending in May. We're going to have to come up with a new show. Honestly, we're going to do, like, 3 shows where it's just one season. I need some momentum in my life after this huge undertaking that is Buffy. But, you know, we'll add it to the list, as always.
Maybe something, like, lighthearted as well.
Yeah, that would be nice, you know, wouldn't it?
This feels really heavy right now.
What's a comedy that only got one season?
Enlisted!
Selfie? Selfie! I love that show!
I also love Enlisted. My boss was the showrunner for Enlisted.
Oh, I loved Enlisted so much.
Fancy. I've never seen Enlisted.
Oh, it's hysterical.
Mm-hmm. If we did Selfie, I could be a oldie. What's the opposite of a newbie? A
super fan?
Super fan.
An oldie. Hey, what are you trying to say?
Oldie.
Yeah, I'll take that one. Cool. Okay. Who wants to read Sarah's comment? Ariana, I feel like since Wes is your fave, maybe you should take this one on.
He is. He's my babe. But right now, Wesley, I don't know. So just want to chime in on Wes for a moment. In that last episode, some people were voicing their frustrations about Wes being out of character lately, but I totally disagree. I agree with you, Sarah. I disagree with those people from last episode. Maybe this is something that has picked up more on rewatch, but Wes has always had that darkness lurking inside him. We've never gone in depth about his childhood, but it is understood that his father was abusive, and perhaps because of this, Wes has always had this vague sense of worthlessness buried underneath the emotions he shows to the world. He's covered this up by devoting himself to the Watchers and then to Angel's team. Now that he's lost both of those, he really doesn't have any barriers left to protect him from that darkness. And aside from hating himself, which he certainly does, he also carries so much anger towards his friends for abandoning him that it's making it even harder for him to pull himself out of this hole. Lila serves several functions for him as both a distraction from his own emptiness and a weird way to punish himself for having that darkness inside him. He likes punishing himself for sure. Wes is definitely not changing himself to make his personality appeal to Lila more. This Wes is just what is left after you've stripped away everything he's ever cared about. Whether or not you're interested in this version of Wes is obviously a different question. Personally, Wes's arc has always been one of my favorites in the Buffyverse. I feel like Caitlin really nailed it on the head when you said earlier, when you said that that Fred is like how he wishes he could be and Lila is who he is. Really.
Yeah. Lots of thoughts about Wes. I'm pretty sure they're going to continue. So this
still
will be
sexy. He's sexy in any form.
He is pretty sexy. I'm not going to lie.
I don't know. You've seen him on How I Met Your Mother. He's not sexy in there. Anyway, moving on.
Oh, no,
that's
I have
not Wesley. That's Sandy, the weatherman.
I know. I'm just kidding.
Okay, let's look ahead. We're going to go back to Buffy and Angel. And now, hey, we're both on the same line now, both 706 and 406 for this. So we've got Ariana's assumptions, Kristen's contemplations, Buffy 706, him, and Angel 406, spin the bottle.
Okay, so I haven't seen episodes 4 or 5 of Buffy, so no spoilers, guys. Episode 6, I'm going to say, since it's titled Him, is going to be all about Spike because he is my favorite him, and I haven't gotten to be on this season yet while he's had his new transformation, but I'm obsessed with it, and I love him, and I forgive everything he's ever done because he's Angel.
Wow. I think, though,
you have to forgive him.
I think that's a very good assumption, and I am contemplating the fact that that makes a lot of sense because while I don't want to spoil anything for you in the last two, there's not a ton of Spike in there. And like, it's getting to the time where we need to figure out what the hell is going on with Spike. And we need to get there. So I think that's absolutely what this is going to be about. It's going to be about Spike.
Good. I like Spike with the soul.
Yeah.
I like that he's a little weird, yeah. A little bit more William in him. I like it. As for spin the bottle?
I really just want it to be about spinning the bottle. Like,
yes, I want them to play spin the bottle.
I want them playing spin the bottle in the hotel. I don't know why, but it just, that is a really funny visual. And I want them all to just regress to teenagers and like play spin the bottle for an episode.
Cordelia's just going to kiss all of them until she's like, oh, yep, I have a connection with you.
Yeah. Yes, and she'll
true
get her
love
memory
kiss.
Back.
Maybe that'll be how she gets back her memories. She has to kiss each of them to get all of her memories back.
Or, yes, obviously I think that's more true, but if Connor was not totally unbearable, then this would be the Connor-centric fun high school-themed episode. He brings his friends home, and they throw a party at the hotel, and Angel gets really upset. And he's like, Dad! I'm sorry. He's like, go to your room.
Quintessential party throwing episode and the consequences that result. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. The consequences would be a portal would open and like demons would come out and kill all of his friends. Boy.
I was going to say, parties never go well in the Buffyverse.
Mm-mm. Yeah, no.
Not
when
ever.
Cordy comes out, she's like, I told you to listen to your father.
Sounds legit to me. Mm-hmm. All right, guys. Well, thank you once again for listening to us. We will return next week for these episodes. And hope you had a good time. Until then, I'm Karen.
I'm Caitlin.
I'm Mariana.
And I'm Kristen.
Bye, everyone.
Bye.
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 Gage just went,
aww.
It's like, what's your problem?
Like, I'm here in case you forgot. Like, I'm here. Just pay attention to me.
He's not even looking at me. He's lying on the floor, like, near the door. And I just hear,
aww. Is he morose or was it his stomach? That sounded like it could have been a stomach sound.
It's okay.
He is morose.
Gage! Is it because I haven't paid you a lot of attention today? He tried to eat a receipt earlier, which he usually only does if I haven't paid enough attention.
I mean, I do that too, so.
I mean, yeah. He steals stuff to eat, usually. Like, he really only steals stuff and makes sure I know that he took it if I haven't been paying attention. So a couple days ago, it was a highlighter.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
And earlier today it was a receipt from Walgreens. And he just like plopped right in front of me and was gonna chew on it.
It's like, yep, look at this thing I got. Yeah, you better stop me.
Pay attention to me.
Yeah.
Oh, sweetheart. He came over for pets.